All right, diving right in today. We're looking at a case from Washington State, a real game changer when it comes to land use and water rights.
It sure is.
It's Whatcom County versus Western Washington Growth Management Hearings Board, but most people just call it the Hearst decision.
Yeah, the Hearst decision. And this one really shifted things in Washington when it comes to balancing development, you know, building and all that, with protecting water.
Yeah, it's a big one. And especially for anyone, you know, studying law or working in areas like land use or environmental law, understanding what Hearst means, it's essential.
Totally agree. It gets right to the heart of that constant struggle, doesn't it? Trying to allow for growth and development, but making sure we don't wreck our water resources in the process.
Exactly. And that's all happening within the rules of Washington's Growth Management Act, the GMA.
Right, the GMA. You know, for our listeners out there, especially those of you who are law students, really getting into the Hearst case is like a crash course on how Washington deals with these two huge things, land use planning and water rights. And we've got some really focused materials to work with today, a case brief and a standard brief. They give us a really solid, complete picture of this decision and why it matters so much.
So our mission today is pretty clear, right? We're going to break down the Hearst decision, pull out the really important stuff that shows why it's so important for how Washington manages land and water.
And it's not an exaggeration to say this is a landmark case, especially through the GMA.
Yeah.
Hearst is right at the center of this conversation that never seems to end. How do we manage growth and protect our water? I mean, this case, it's still debated today and its effects are real. You can see them.
No doubt. Okay, so let's set the scene. What were the specific circumstances, the facts on the ground, that led to this whole legal battle?
Well, the big issue was Whatcom County's comprehensive plan. This is the plan they put together for managing growth and development. The problem, it allowed development to happen using these things called permit-exempt wells without making them independently prove that the water was actually there.
Permit-exempt wells. Right off the bat, that sounds like it could be a problem.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. These are wells that are used for, let's say, individual homes, usually out in more rural areas. They're small scale, taking less than 5,000 gallons of groundwater each day. And the key here is they don't have to go through the normal state permitting process for water rights, hence the exempt part. Now, here's where it gets tricky. Whatcom County's plan basically said, unless the Department of Ecology has specifically said, nope, no wells in this basin, we're assuming the water is available.
So they were basically passing the buck to the state when it came to making sure there was enough water.
That's one way to put it. They were relying heavily on this ecology regulation called the Nooksack Rule.
Mm.
This rule restricted new withdrawals of groundwater in some basins, the Nooksack being a key one in this case, but it still let these permit-exempt wells slide by.
So you've got areas where water might be scarce, but they're still letting development happen based on these exempt wells. I see where the conflict is starting to brew.
Exactly. And this caught the eye of some environmental groups, including a guy named Eric Hearst, who ended up being the namesake of this whole decision.
Wow.
They argued that Whatcom County just wasn't doing enough to protect water, which is something the GMA mandates. They said, look, this plan is ignoring the whole issue of whether there's even enough water to go around.
And this challenge, it didn't go straight to the Supreme Court, right? There were a few steps along the way. Walk us through that.
You got it. First stop was the Western Washington Growth Management Hearings Board. Think of it as a kind of court specifically for the GMA. They review these comprehensive plans to see if they actually follow the law. And in this case, the board took the side of the environmental groups. They basically said, Whatcom County, your plan doesn't cut it. You're not doing enough to protect water like the GMA says you have to.
Round one to the environmentalists, but the court honey wasn't done fighting, were they?
Nope, they weren't. They appealed the board's decision to the Court of Appeals. And this time, the Court of Appeals actually sided with the county. They said that relying on ecology's regulations, like that Nooksack rule, was enough.
Okay, so now we have two different bodies, each with a different take on this really important question. Is that what sent this whole thing to the Washington Supreme Court?
Exactly. You've got these lower courts disagreeing, and the issue is huge. It affects land use and water management all over Washington. The Supreme Court stepped in to settle this fundamental question. What does the GMA actually require counties to do?
Makes sense. So what were the big legal questions facing the Supreme Court?
At the heart of it all was how to interpret the GMA.
Uh-huh.
First, did the GMA say the counties had to independently prove that there was enough water, both legally and physically, before they gave the green light to development.
So not just assuming that if the state hasn't said no, then it's okay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or could they just rely on the Department of Ecology, like Whatcom County was trying to do? That was question number one. The second big question was about those permit-exempt wells. Did allowing all these wells, even though each one individually takes a small amount of water, did that go against the bigger environmental goals of the GMA, especially if you consider the cumulative impact of them all?
Right, because even if one little well doesn't make a big difference, a whole bunch of them could have a huge effect.
That's the idea. So the court had to decide, are these permit-exempt wells okay, or are they a problem waiting to happen?
Okay, enough buildup. Let's hear what the Washington Supreme Court decided. What was their reasoning, and what were the different opinions? Let's start with the majority.
Okay, so the majority opinion, written by Justice Wiggins, didn't mince words. They said, counties have an independent duty under the GMA. They have to make sure there is both legal and physical water available before they approve any development.
Independent duty, that's huge. So they couldn't just shrug and say, well, ecology hasn't said anything.
Exactly. The court really hammered that point home. They said this duty was specific to counties. It wasn't something they could just pass off to the Department of Ecology or say, well, the Nooksack rule covers it. The reason. The GMA gives local governments very specific responsibilities when it comes to protecting resources. Those responsibilities are different from what ecology does at the state level.
And what about the cumulative impact of those exempt wells? Did the court talk about that at all?
Oh, absolutely. They were very clear about their concerns there. The majority recognized that one tiny well might not seem like a big deal. But if you have tons of those wells all pulling from the same water source, it can add up to a major problem. It can lower the water table, hurt stream flows, maybe even damage fish habitat or affect the water supply for people who have senior water rights, meaning they were there first.
It's like 1,000 little cuts adding up to a serious wound.
Perfect analogy.
Yeah.
And the court laid down a really clear statement about this independent duty. They said, and I quote, counties have an independent duty to ensure water availability. That pretty much sums up their whole conclusion. They weren't just splitting hairs over who does what. I think they realized that local governments are usually the ones who really understand the specific environmental conditions and development pressures in their areas. Having them do their own assessment is a crucial safeguard, something a state agency might miss.
Okay, so a clear win for those who want to protect water. But as we know, not everyone agreed. Tell us about the dissent.
Right, so Justice Stevens wrote the dissent. The main point they made was this. The majority's view of the GMA, it wasn't really backed up by what the law actually says. The dissent argued that the court was basically adding a whole new requirement for counties that wasn't there in black and white. They also worried that this new independent duty would make things really tough for rural development. Imagine, it could be much harder to build a home in some rural areas.
So you have this tension, this push and pull between protecting water and the potential downsides for rural communities.
You got it. And that tension is still a big part of the conversation about Hearst today.
We also had a concurring opinion, didn't we? What did that add to the mix?
We did. Chief Justice Mattson wrote that one. She agreed with the final outcome. Whatcom County's plan wasn't good enough when it came to water. But she wanted to emphasize the idea of shared responsibility. Her point, making sure there's enough water isn't just the county's job. It's something that state agencies like ecology, local governance, even tribal entities all need to work on together. She really wanted to highlight how important it is for everyone to be on the same page and work together to manage water.
So you've got the majority saying counties have this independent duty, the dissent saying, whoa, hold on, the law doesn't actually say that, and then a concurrence saying, yes, but let's not forget that everyone needs to work together on this. So bottom line, what happened? What did the Supreme Court actually decide to do?
They sided with the Growth Management Hearings Board, the very first decision. They reversed what the Court of Appeals had said and told Whatcom County to go back and fix their plan so it followed the GMA's rules about making sure there's enough water.
Back to the drawing board for Whatcom County. But this decision, it wasn't just about one county, was it? What was the ripple effect throughout Washington State?
Oh, this was huge for the whole state. Because the court said counties have this independent duty, it meant that every single county in Washington had to take this seriously. They had to make sure they were thoroughly checking both the legal and physical availability of water before they approved any development that used permit-exempt wells.
And I imagine that led to some pretty big changes.
It did. In some parts of Washington, Hearst caused counties to put a temporary halt to development in rural areas. They had to figure out how to follow this new rule and do all these water assessments. It really changed the game for rural land use, and in a very concrete way.
Okay, let's shift gears a bit and talk directly to our listeners, especially the law students out there. What are the big, important legal concepts they need to understand to really grasp the significance of the Hearst decision?
I'd say there are a few big ones. The most important is understanding the Growth Management Act, the GMA. This is the state law in Washington that says you got to do comprehensive planning for land use. The goals: to stop sprawl and protect important natural resources, and of course, water is a big one.
And we've talked about them a lot today, but it's worth repeating. Understanding those permit-exempt wells is crucial. These are the small wells, usually for homes in rural areas, that don't have to go through the normal permitting process. Knowing what they are and why people are worried about their cumulative impact, that's key to understanding this whole case.
And then we have the NooQSAC rule, which was the Department of Ecology's attempt to manage groundwater in a specific area. But the court said, nope, relying on that rule alone isn't good enough if you're a county and you're trying to follow the GMA.
Right. And maybe the most important distinction Hearst made was the difference between legal water availability and physical water availability. Could you break that down for us one more time?
Absolutely. When we talk about legal water availability, we mean, do the existing water rights allow for this new use? It's about the legal right to use the water. Physical water availability, on the other hand, is about whether the water is actually there. Is there enough water in the source to meet the need without messing up existing water rights or the environment? That includes things like making sure there's enough water flowing in streams for fish. Whatcom County's plan failed because it didn't look closely enough at either of these things. They just assumed that if ecology hadn't said no, the legal part was fine. And they didn't do their own check on a physical water supply or think about the combined effect of all those exempt wells.
Okay, so that all makes sense. But one thing I'm still wondering about is why counties couldn't just trust the Department of Ecology. They're the experts on water, right?
You'd think so, wouldn't you? But the court made it clear that the GMA puts specific responsibilities on local governments. Ecology manages water rights at the state level, sure, but the GMA gives counties the power and the duty to plan for land use and to make sure development doesn't harm the environment in their areas. Think of it like this. Ecology sets the big rules for water use, like across the whole state. They're kind of like a state agency setting building codes. But counties, when they do their planning and permitting, they act more like local inspectors. They have to make sure each development, whether it needs water or something else, is actually following the rules of the GMA and protecting resources. Just like a building inspector has to make sure a building is up to code, even if there's already a state code in place.
That's a helpful way to think about it. Let's go back to those cumulative impacts one more time. It's kind of a hard concept to grasp. Can you give us a more real-world example of why it's such a big deal?
Sure. Imagine a little stream that gets its water from underground. One house with a permit-exempt well, taking a little bit of water. It might not seem like much, but what if you have dozens, maybe even hundreds of homes all doing the same thing, all pulling from the same underground source? Suddenly, it's not so small anymore. That water table can drop, the stream might dry up, fish could lose their habitat, people with older water rights might not have enough. It's a classic tragedy of the commons. Each person is acting in their own self-interest, and it seems harmless enough, but when everyone does it, the shared resource gets destroyed.
And as we touched on before, there's this underlying tension, this push and pull between different priorities. The dissent worried about stifling development in rural areas, while the majority was clearly focused on protecting the environment. How does that tension play out in the bigger picture of the GMA?
That's the million-dollar question in a lot of these land use debates. The GMA is trying to balance a lot of things that are often at odds: economic growth, providing homes for people, protecting the environment, and so on. Hearst definitely tipped the scales a bit more toward environmental protection, at least when it comes to water. The dissent was right to raise concerns about the potential impact on rural communities. It shows how hard it is to allow for growth without hurting the environment. It's this ongoing struggle to find a way to manage our limited resources in a way that's both good for the environment and good for people.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, what are the big takeaways from Hearst that our law student listeners should really keep in mind?
First, Hearst is a great example of how the courts, by interpreting a law, can have a huge and long-lasting impact on environmental policy. The Supreme Court's take on the GMA, in this case, created a whole new set of responsibilities for local governments.
And it really shows how the legal system tries to balance these competing interests. the desire for development, and the need to protect the environment. You can see those different priorities laid out clearly in the majority and dissenting opinions.
Exactly. And Hurst makes us think about the bigger picture of administrative law. What's the relationship between state agencies like ecology and local governments? Who's responsible for what? Hurst made it crystal clear that local governments have their own duties under state law, even when state agencies also have power in that area.
It also raises questions about how different agencies work together, right? The courts seem to be saying that just relying on the state wasn't good enough. Local governments have to be more involved and take a more active role.
Right on. And Hurst is a good reminder of how state law, in this case the GMA, can really shape what happens with land use at the local level. And ultimately, those local decisions are what affect our environment and our natural resources.
So, big picture. The Hurst decision changed how Washington State thinks about the link between water and land use. It said, loud and clear, that counties have a duty to make sure there's enough water, both legally and in reality, before they let development happen, especially when that development relies on those permit-exempt wells.
And we're still seeing the effects of that decision today all over the state. It's changing how land use planning is done,
yeah.
And it sparked this ongoing conversation about the best ways to manage our water resources as our state keeps growing.
And on that note, here's a final thought to chew on. Thinking about the Hurst decision, what might happen in future legal challenges? Will they try to fine-tune that balance between individual property rights, what local communities want to do, and the overall goal of protecting the environment under the GMA? Or maybe think about this. How does Hurst change how we understand the precautionary principle in environmental law? This is the idea that it's better to be safe than sorry when it comes to the environment. And what about the role of local governments in protecting shared resources? Hurst certainly has a lot to say about that. One thing's for sure. If you're going to work in the world of land use and environmental law, cases like Hurst are must-reads. They're essential.
I completely agree. Hurst gives us a framework for understanding how legal principles, policy decisions, and the need to protect our natural resources all come together. It's a lot to think about, but it's fascinating stuff.
It really is. And that's a wrap for this deep dive.
Until next time.